Hello, my name is Andreina, and this is Girls Talk About Music, a podcast where women can talk in depth about their love of music and how music has shaped their lives. This is episode 4, Sound Engineer. In a study conducted by the University of Southern California Annenberg Inclusion Initiative called Inclusion in the Recording Studio, has revealed for the last 3 years that, quote, women are still missing in the music industry, end quote. The study looked not only at the hot 100-year-end Billboard charts, but also the 2020 Grammy nominations and the numbers behind the scenes. The 2020 version of the study concluded that women represent less than one-third of all performers and 12.5% of songwriters across 800 songs. The study also showed that women account for only 2.6% of producers across 500 songs, which means that for every 37 producers who are men, there is one woman. The problem is not relegated to the United States. Here in Canada, the numbers are similar. An article published last year by the CBC showed that women only made up 24.7% of the overall nominations at the Juno Awards. This is the biggest music awards here in Canada. I have personally felt this lack of representation, especially when I look back at my years as a young music fan. But of course, everywhere we look, there are women challenging these numbers and taking their rightful space in the industry. One of these women is Swan Baga, a sound engineer working in Vancouver and touring with bands across North America and Europe. Swan is an audio instructor at the Nimbus School of Recording and Media in Vancouver, BC. She has also worked as a sound engineer at most Vancouver venues and is currently the technical director at the Fox Cabaret in Vancouver. Swan grew up immersed in music, but her musical career follows a bit of an unconventional path. I was so excited to talk to Swan and hear her stories and insight about the music industry, but especially about her perspective of being a woman in a very male-dominated field. We met on a rainy afternoon at the Vancouver Public Library's Inspiration Labs to record this interview, and it was such a treat. I honestly could have spent all afternoon talking about music with Swan. Maybe next time. For now, here's my interview with sound engineer, tour manager, and front of house technician, Swan Baga.
Well, thank you very much, Swan, for coming all the way here to talk to me today. I am very excited to talk to you, and obviously we just had a teaching moment when you helped me set up the whole recording equipment because you're a pro, and I'm very excited to talk to you.
I tried, you know. This is not quite my field, but I know a little bit about it.
That's great. So, Swan, where do you grow up?
I grew up in France, so I'm from France originally. I was born in Bayonne in the Basque country, and when I was 5 years old, I moved to the center of France in a very small town, 5,000 people. I grew up there with my grandparents, and it was a very nice place to live.
Oh, that's amazing. That's mm-hmm. That's great. Donc, tu parles français?
Oui.
C'est bien. But we'll continue in English. So you grew up in this small town with your grandparents. What are your earliest memories of music? When did you know you love music?
To me, so my mom was a piano teacher, a music teacher for children. So there was always music around the house when I was very young. She passed away when I was just before I turned 5. And then when I moved to my grandparents' place, we had our piano there. And my grandparents put me in music school. And so I took music theory and piano lessons. But that was never really like my thing. It was like learning classical things. Really, for me, things changed a lot when I became a teenager. Like I was 12 years old or something, and I started listening to the music I actually really liked. That was good times for me, like just being surrounded by my CDs and a lot of rock and roll in that days. Those were the late 90s, I would say. So yeah, I was into a lot of rock and roll at that time.
That's great. What bands?
So I think the first one that was really like I got obsessed with was Nirvana. And then that got me into Sonic Youth. I had an arts teacher in junior high who gave me a bunch of tapes. And he gave me Dinosaur Jr., L7, Sonic Youth, some live performances by Nirvana. And that was really, really cool of him to have done that. And introduced me to, mostly Riot Girl and grunge movement, which was cool. And then there was one band that I completely obsessed over, which was called Placebo. Band from the UK. They were quite good for the first three albums in the late 90s, early 2000s. Not so much these days, but you know.
That's okay. You always have those three albums.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you play any instruments. You said you play piano a little bit, but did you keep it up as you grew up? Or did you pick up any other instruments?
Actually, yeah, when I was 13, I picked up my mom's acoustic guitar that I found. And yeah, I played that constantly. And I also started playing the drums when I was 13 years old. I took some drum lessons and found a used beat-up drum kit and put that in my grandparents' place. I would just play along to the bands I listened to, and there was an after-school program at my music school. They were trying to incorporate modern music into the school, so we formed bands and would play covers, and I would usually play drums for that, or a bit of guitar, a bit of piano, you know. Those good times.
That's amazing. So you always played. You always were involved in music. It was a big part of your life, both playing and listening.
Yeah, it really was. Like I remember my grandmother, you know, when she would talk to family members about me, she would always like, oh, for her, it's music. It's always been music. So
that's interesting. But then you chose a little bit of a different path, because I understand you, after high school, mm-hmm. you went to university to study electrical engineering.
Yeah, so basically when I was about 15 years old, I started going to shows quite a bit in France, and I was really, really into watching the technicians on stage, like during changeovers, you know, but when one band is done and the other one is about to start, you change over the stage, and I would watch those people and be like, wow, this is really cool. Or I would hang out near the sound booth and watch the sound technicians there. And so I knew I wanted to be a sound technician. I didn't know if I wanted to do recording or live. And my first step was just to get more knowledge in the electronics field. So I went to university for that in France and got a diploma in electrical engineering.
That is, I'm just scratching my head, because that's an incredible story. So you love music, but then it is unusual in that you didn't think, I'm going to be a musician, I'm going to be working the technical side of music, which is a bit unusual. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be, but it is for a 15-year-old girl. And then go to electrical engineering to somehow make it into a music. And it worked out.
It did.
It worked out. That is just so interesting. The question, I guess, is why not being a performer? Why was the technical side, the behind the scenes, the mixing, the sound that hooked you?
I think it's just not really in my personality to be a performer. And also, like, I never got really good at playing music. It was a hobby, even though I was obsessed with it. I was really more into really listening to music, and I had hundreds and hundreds of live recordings. And I would get really annoyed when they sounded bad. Because I was like, oh, this was recorded, you know, with two mics on someone's hat in the middle of the crowd or something. And the best recordings I had were board recordings. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel like, yeah, I like this. That I can make something sound really good, where it maybe, you know, for the audience doesn't sound so good. But that really, for me, was, I needed to learn. I'm a big physics nerd, So I wanted to learn what happened, you know, if I'm working on a console, what actually happens when I turn a knob, what happens to the electronics, to the electrical signal in it, because electricity or sound, you know, is wave theory, so the same physics apply, and yeah, being able to understand, oh, if I push this fader, this is how it actually affects the sound exactly, and so in university, that's what I really got into. I really like the electronics part of my program, and just like building filters and things like that, and like applied math was, I really got into math at that point.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah.
It all goes together, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the great thing about that program is at the end of the 2 years, you get to do a 3 month internship. And, you know, everybody in my program was going into like companies where they, I don't know, like, what do you call it? Like chain production, where they're in charge of like automatism, like conveyor belts.
Yes.
And things like that. And like learning how to program those and all that. And I decided to do my internship in a live music venue.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea. My teachers were like, okay, but what are you going to do there? And basically I was a stagehand. So it's like the first job you kind of get in the live sound, where you set up microphones, you plug everything in, and just assist the bands however you can.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was there for 3 months, and that was incredible.
Oh, it sounds like a dream. So how old were you by that time when you were doing the internship?
I was 20 years old.
Well, that's that right there, that's the dream. For any music fan, that you somehow make it to a venue, mm-hmm. and start working with bands. I mean, that's just so exciting. So I was going to ask you, how do you know you wanted to explore a music career? You already explained that. So you are now a sound engineer and an instructor here in Vancouver, correct? So what I'm really curious to learn is, when do you realize... I guess I'm asking is because when I was growing up in Venezuela, there was absolutely no representation of women on or off the stage. Mm-hmm. And I was a huge music fan, like you were, same thing. But, you know, I didn't see any women. I didn't see myself. How did you make that jump from saying, that intellectual jump from saying, hey, I can do that? Because I think it's difficult if you don't have any models around you. It takes a certain confidence, or, you know, usually you have somebody who guides you into the into that path. But you yourself seem to have, you know, figured it out.
Yeah, I didn't really think about it that much. Like, I knew there was, I knew there was not a lot of women, you know, in the technical side of things. But I didn't think for 1 second that I couldn't do it. Or I think like it's the way I was brought up. You know, my grandparents were very supportive of whatever I would do and what I would choose for a career. And they also really supported me by allowing me to skip school to go see shows when I was like 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
Which was great. But then when I did, at university, it was a program with 100 students. There was 5 women.
Okay.
So the 5%, right? In electrical engineering. But the great thing, I was extremely lucky when I did that internship at that concert venue. The monitor engineer there was a woman.
Oh, wow.
And to me, like, because she was there, you know, I didn't think that it was a big deal. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, she cool, she's going to be my mentor. And I was extremely lucky to have a woman as my mentor, for sure. And she was bilingual too, which was great. Like, she would speak English, and I was still practicing my English at the time to communicate with bands and everything. So, and she was just so badass and so cool. I just wanted to hang out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is an important moment. So you're 20 years old, and you have a mentor who's a mm-hmm. woman. So perhaps at the moment you didn't realize yeah. how rare that was. Because even a lot of, you know, a long time after that, still today, 2020, yeah. we're still struggling to see women in positions, in technical positions. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but, mm-hmm. You know, that's a very lucky, yeah. Wonderful thing.
And that's the thing, like, yeah, I didn't think of it, you know, like, same when I was 15 years old, decided to do this. Yeah, I only saw men on stage, but I didn't think that it was a problem, you know, and I was like, yeah, they're doing it, I can do it.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So you didn't need to see actually necessarily women musicians. You just, you know, mm-hmm. just knew you loved it and you wanted to do it, and that's yeah. great.
I listened to quite a bit of women in band as well. Like again, like Kim Gordon, Sonic Youth was big influence on me, and Shirley Manson, Garbage. Really loved these people. But yeah, like on the technical side of things, it was absolutely no one, that's for sure. We're talking like, yeah, early 2000s,
yes. Yeah, so that is amazing. And a little bit later, I do want to ask you about the live recordings, because I'm quite obsessed with live recordings. They're so you know, concerts are by nature, music is fleeting, and it's over and you leave the venue, and you can in any way reproduce what you felt, what you heard, mm-hmm. but then somebody makes a proper recording of yeah. a concert, and it's a treasure. It's a treasure because it's very specific moment in time that won't be repeated. Mm-hmm. It is for music fans. For in fact, some of my favorite albums are live albums as well.
For me too. Yeah. That's very interesting what you're saying, because that's completely my approach to live music, and even not without the not with the recording, just a live performance. That's what I love so much about it. You know, it's just happening in this moment with these people on stage, with these people in the audience, and then it's over. And I really love the impermanence of that. You know, it really, you have to be present, and I think that, yeah, that's my favorite thing about live music.
Yeah, and then be able to somehow reproduce that in a mm-hmm. record. You know, I get goosebumps just remembering some of the live recordings that I love. For example, there's a Rush live album called Exit Stage Left. And one thing I love about that album is I can hear the venue. I can yeah. sense mm-hmm. the venue. I can feel how big it was. I can somehow, because that's part of how that album was mixed and mm-hmm. how it was produced, that you can feel.
Yeah, there's an energy.
There's that, an energy, yeah. and mm-hmm. you can feel that it was a medium-sized stadium. It's just, and it makes it so unique, and it makes you dream, and you can feel that you were there even though you were not. Yeah. So that's the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite live albums growing up was Jeff Buckley, Mr. White Boy. It's a compilation of a few live recordings, but oh my god, it's like his performances were nothing compared to what was happening on the Grace album, you know. It's like really taking it to a next level, and oh, that was so good. Yeah, the goosebumps, definitely.
They happen, and that's the beauty of it. You can play it many times and they come back, because that mm-hmm. magic, somehow somebody was there to capture it, which is amazing, and it's That's a gift great. For music fans. So we've touched a little bit on that, but can you explain then what a sound engineer or a sound technician does? Because for us non-technical people, we don't really know what you guys do, but we're thankful.
So what I do for a concert, there's band on stage. We set up all the microphones for like every piece of equipment that's there, so like, you know, every piece of the drum kit, the kick drum, the snare, everything, bass, guitars, keyboards, vocals, anything else, and then all these microphones come into a console or soundboard, And so we have control over each microphone. Mm-hmm. So our job is to make each channel sound good. And then the most important part is to make all of them sound good together. And we also have to really be aware of the acoustics of the room and the sound system we're using, of course. And so there's usually a lot of people involved, like a system technician is going to set up the PA system and tune it to the room. You have the front of house mixer, which is usually my role, where I mix the band for the audience. And then you have monitor engineer who mix the monitor speakers for the musicians on stage so they can hear themselves.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of components, mm-hmm. a lot of components. And we, you know, the audience, we only get that front of the house mixing, which is usually your role. That's what
you said. Yeah, that's usually what it, although like I work in pretty small venues in general, so I tend to do both monitors and front of house because it's only one technician who does both. In a lot of cases, but that's what I love about like mixing front of house for the audience. It's a very creative position because you get to mix the way you want to hear it, you know. Whereas when you mix for the band as a monitor engineer, you're mixing for each musician exactly what they want to hear. So it's a bit of a different approach.
Oh, sure. that is fascinating. That is fascinating because some of them they want more drums, some of them they want little guitar. You know, you see them signaling all the time. You mm-hmm. see the musicians absolutely. Stay signaling, and you're they're signaling to you.
Yeah, yeah. When they go, it needs more me, more me.
That's great. You know, you said you make the mix, you mix the sound for the audience. You know, I'm a short person, so I'm usually right in front of the stage, mm-hmm. in the barrier. That's my favorite spot. But is it necessarily the best spot for hearing your work?
No, actually, it's one of the worst. Sometimes you don't even have any coverage from the speakers at the very front of the stage if you don't have the right system set up. So if you're right at the front, you're probably going to hear a lot of the stage itself. Like maybe the drums and the guitars are pointing right at your face and that's what you're hearing, and the vocals might be a bit lost, you know, on your side or something. Usually the best spot in the room would be like in that center of the room.
Yeah.
But the technology has changed a lot in the past 10 years or so in system teching, so people install sound system, and their main goal is to achieve the same sound for every seat in the room, which is incredibly difficult because of physics and acoustics, but that's what they aim to do. And yeah, if you go to a nice theater these days, or you know, stadium shows or whatever, they're definitely getting there, and it's getting really, really, really good.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. That mm-hmm. is really incredible to hear. One of the things, the reasons I say that is because I've been to concerts where, yes, I was able to see the band, which is, for me, sort of like the most important thing. I really don't want to miss anything that the musicians are doing. Sometimes to, you know, I miss the actual music a little bit because I'm just right there in front. And I remember one show that was ruined because of bad sound. And it was just such a disappointment. I went to see Sam Roberts' band at the Commodore, which is a very nice venue right here in Vancouver, where everybody plays. It's a medium-sized venue, beautiful place. And we were right there in the front, and we got bass.
Yep, that's what you would get in that room. To be honest with you, yeah, the setup at the Commodore is extremely wide because the stage is very wide itself. I know they upgraded it recently, and I haven't been since. But I mixed there a couple times. It is not an easy room to mix in because you have the floating wooden floors. So it's quite a live room. I think it sounds awesome when you know you have the right person at the console. And the right band, of course, and it can't sound awesome, but I've heard it sound not so good either.
Exactly. No, I've heard some amazing concerts there for mm-hmm. sure, but that one in particular, I'm not sure what happened, and it was not a good experience. We were a little disappointed, but then you realize the importance of, you know, the sound engineer mm-hmm. For making sure that everybody, even if you're right there in the front or way at the back, can have an experience that is memorable.
And a similar experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go, yeah.
But
so,
the funny thing is, our goal is to be invisible. So, like, you don't notice that we're there. And that's the thing, like, you will notice that we're here if it's bad.
There you go. There you go. That's a very good point. So we're talking about venues here in Vancouver. I understand you are currently the sound engineer at the Fox Cabaret.
Yeah, that's correct.
But you have worked at a lot of the venues, if not most of the venues here in Vancouver. How has that experience been?
Oh, it's been awesome. I feel very lucky. I first started out Café du Soleil on Commercial Drive.
Yes,
that was my very first gig in town. And you know, small little cafe / restaurant with a little stage, and they have music almost every night. And I really got my teeth on there for sure, because you know the equipment was not necessarily super great at the time. I had to work with what I had, and I really learned to troubleshoot really well at that place. And a few months later, I got offered an internship at the Biltmore Cabaret, which was just opening. That was January 2008, about 12 years ago already. And I had the house technician there. Dylan was my mentor, and I learned so much from him. Like, he was super professional, really fast. Like, one of our skills is to be really fast at our job, you know, because if something goes wrong during a show, you really don't have much more than 30 seconds to fix it, because otherwise it's awkward for everybody. And so I was really lucky to be, I was there for 5 years. I started as an intern, became a technician, and became the house technician there after a couple of years. And that was awesome. Then I started touring quite a bit. So I didn't have a house gig in Vancouver anymore. But when I was not on the road, I would still work there. I would work, I don't know, the Astoria, Rio Theater, Enza Club, Railway Club. And a few years later, I became the house technician at the Cobalt.
Yeah,
that was 2017 to 2018, right up until they shut down in May 2018. And that was really, really fun. I love that place very much. Just great bands, great community, great staff. After Cobalt, I started working at the Fox Cabaret. So I've been there for almost 2 years now. And it's an amazing place. Same thing. Great, great staff. Great boss. And a great sound team. Like, I got to hire people I wanted to work with. And it's been really great.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great to hear as a music fan here in the city, that the community is strong and the community supports each other. That's really good to hear. I was going to ask, we kind of jumped ahead a little bit, but when you moved to Vancouver, and when did you move to Vancouver?
Right after that internship in France.
In France, so
I was
yeah.
20 years old and I moved to Vancouver.
And right away you started?
I joined a band.
Good.
When I moved here, I went to UBC for like 8 months. I wanted to become more bilingual.
So
I was not fluent in English yet, and so I took some classes in physics, math, linguistics, things like that. But I really didn't like North American university vibe. That was not for me.
Yeah.
But I was playing with my band called Winter Mitts, and we just had so much fun. And then we went on tour in the summer of 2007, and it was the first time I was in a completely English-speaking environment for 2 weeks, and that was like a click in my brain, and I became bilingual then.
During the tour.
Awesome. During the tour, yeah. Which was really great. And then September after that, I went to school for audio engineering at a school that was called Pacific Audiovisual Institute.
So right away you kind of head into the music, just practice your English, and then just you never lost sight of your career goal, which was to be a sound engineer.
And I didn't know, you know, where I would start, where it would take me. I still didn't. Like, I knew I had an experience in live sound and I really, really loved it, but I didn't have any experience in the studio. But then when I went to school, we had some like studio time, and I just didn't enjoy it. I thought it was too slow paced. And I really liked the being challenged by time, you know, that really drives me. So that's what I love about concerts.
Yeah, again, back to that live that live experience.
Yeah, like you're on the edge, you know, it's like, okay, what's going on now?
It is a performance that you're putting out every show have to. You have to be on, and you have to be, it's an, did you say, it's a creative experience.
Absolutely.
As much as the musicians on stage.
Yeah, in a way, I see it, it's definitely a creative part of the job, like when the show actually starts. Like, yes.
So everything I've heard so far, you know, your experience has been quite positive, but did you experience any issues, any barriers when you were starting out, especially as a young woman in the industry?
To be honest with you, I actually did not. I was, again, very lucky where I was. When I started Café du Soleil, it was because I knew the person who was booking the bands there, and she offered me the job. I was like, they were looking for people, and I just went there. And then when I got my internship at the Biltmore, it was because the house technician Dylan came to my school and asked, I'm looking for an intern. I need someone who knows how to solder cables. And I raised my hand because I had a degree in electrical engineering. So I was like, yeah, I can solder some cables. And, you know, it was like, great, then you're my intern. That's it. Like, starting out, no, I didn't have any issues.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I was really lucky, for sure.
That's really beautiful to hear. It's just, you know, your skill, come on up.
Yeah.
that's fantastic. So you were talking about your touring career, which you did on your, you know, in your own band, but now you've been touring quite a bit with different bands. So how is that experience? How is that life on the road? How is that, you know, the actual work of making sure everything is, you know, the same every night?
That's a very good point. Consistency, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So I started touring about 9 years ago as a sound technician, and I've worked with lots of different bands. And I love touring, because I love traveling. You know, I've seen more of Canada than I've seen of France, I think. Across the country many times.
Mm.
But what I really enjoy, I like both, you know, being a house technician at a venue in town and going on tour, because when you're working at your own venue, it's like same venue every night, same equipment every night, different band every night. When you're on the road, it's the same band every night, different venue, different equipment every night. So you have to adapt, you know? And I like both a lot. I don't think I could do just one full time.
Uh-huh.
I like the balance of both.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I'm on the road, you know, for consistency, I bring my own microphone, my own microphones for all the bands I work with. And then it's okay, let's see what we have and we make it work. I work on like, small to medium sized tours, so nothing like really big, but
so that consistency every night. But I'm you know, I'm guessing sometimes when you see bands starting up in their tour, you know, they're okay, that was a great first show, but then as the tour goes along, everything seems to be a little bit more fine-tuned, everything seems to be kind of like getting a little better, until the last show everything's like on point. Do you experience that as well?
Oh, for sure. Well, that's the thing. You do the first show. I mean, maybe you didn't have rehearsal with the band. And it's like, okay, let's see what it's like tonight. And then you can tell, like, the band is fine-tuning what they're doing all together, getting their communication all on point. And for me, it's like, oh, okay, that's how this song goes. And that's what I could do on this song and whatnot. And, yeah, by the end of the tour, it's like, it's a very well-oiled machine.
That's great.
Usually, it doesn't take that long, really, to get there. But
yeah,
you work with great musicians and mix. Yeah, it's so much fun.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a lot of fun. What happens when you have an off night? If you do, like I'm imagining like any job, perhaps you have like a little off night here and there.
Yeah. Well, it really depends. You know what we feel like doing. Sometimes you're in the middle of nowhere and you're like, okay, I guess we go to Boston Pizza and watch a movie in the hotel room. It's not really glamorous, you know? Actually, on the last tour I was just on, I was in Europe with a band called Aerialists. They're from Toronto. And we had a drive from Oxford in the UK to Hamburg in Germany.
Ooh.
So it was like over 2 days.
Wow.
And they told me, oh, yeah, we're stopping in Ghent in Belgium after the first drive. And I was like, oh, that's great. I have a friend who lives there. And so we have a night off there, and my friend lives there, and she's playing a show that night. And I hadn't seen her in 5 years.
Wow.
And I got to see her, you know, in our hometown, or where she lives now, at least. And, yeah, I got to see her play a show. So sometimes we go see shows. We go to open mics or go to movie theater. Nice dinner. You know, we try to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
It's very, very tiring to be on the road. So sometimes we just all hang out in our hotel room and watch TV and sleep.
And sleep and try to keep that energy for
when
the show comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. So here in Vancouver and in your experience, you know, you've had great experience all around. But do you have any stories of people being a little skeptical about you or anything like that? you are the sound engineer. Oh, hello.
Yeah. Well, one of the most classic things definitely happens to a lot of women in this field is, you have a band who shows up, maybe they have a touring tech or something, and they ask you, where's the sound guy? Actually, that would be me, but...
the word sound guy is in the dictionary.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's getting way better, for sure. Mm. But in the past, mostly I've had actually issues with my age. I was a house technician at the Biltmore, and I was 23 years old, so I was pretty young. And people would really go, you're bit too young to have this job kind of thing, and you're a woman on top of it, so but I had so much support from my boss and the staff in general, you know. And the thing is, for me, is like, if you, as soon as the band shows up with their touring tech or not, but you just show them you know how to do your job, and then that usually speaks for itself. Not always. There's still going to be people who are going to be sexist and misogynist and stuff. But my experience has been relatively good, for sure.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And you just show them, essentially. You just do your job and show them what you can do. I mean, and you can do anything. I mean, if you know, even after you show them your work, people still have ideas. I mean, absolutely. That is their own problem. That is...
I really don't take things personally, and you know, when I see, usually it's like older sound technicians who have this kind of attitude. That happened to me just last summer at a festival. I mixed a show, and the house technician at the end was like, oh, it sounded pretty good for a girl.
Oh.
I was like, you know what, I'm not like
exactly, don't even gonna respond to that.
No, it's it's important to stand up for yourself, for sure. For me, it's when I interact with people like that, I kind of feel bad for them, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're making a fool of yourself. It's 2020 now.
Exactly. And one of the things that is really interesting when we talk about, you know, when we talk about representation, diversity, all these things, the focus is always on the minority, the women, to kind of speak for themselves when, or teaching others that we can do the job when it's other people's problems,
it's good enough
to do the research. To kind of educate themselves about you know, how the world functions, and that people of all colors, all genders can do all jobs.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So it's not on you to educate anybody. You just have to do your work.
But I've definitely, like, the last couple of years, there's been way more conversation in our industry, coming from men as well.
Yes.
Like, hey, how can we make things, you know, a bit better? Like, I remember on a Facebook group part of, some men were asking, how do we make a tour bus more women-friendly?
Oh.
It's the, you know, the little things. And, you know, there's at least, like, starting conversation is really what helps, and then it becomes the standard and no one cares about it anymore.
Exactly. But it's true, the conversation has to be had. But see, what the difference there is, that they're initiating the conversation in a way, saying, how do we, you know, they're trying to educate themselves by asking you, how do we make it more female friendly and so on. So we do need the allies, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
To be working with the women. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's great. So you mentioned festivals. You also do a lot of festivals. What are some dream festivals that you would like to do that you haven't yet done?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I never thought of that. I'd like to do the Winnipeg Folk Fest.
Yes.
Because I don't think I've done it. It's hard. They all kind of blur. And I've heard it's the best one in Canada.
Oh, my.
But last year I was lucky because I did Vancouver Folk Fest, Calgary Folk Fest, and Edmonton Folk Fest.
Oh, brilliant. So
that was great.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I've done Oshaga once, which was cool. But to be honest with you, I never go to festivals, like, mm-hmm. if I'm not working one.
yeah.
Because I really enjoy small venues, small crowds. So I don't really have a goal to work any type of festivals, really.
Yeah. It's more about the band that you're working mm-hmm. with. And if they are invited to the festival,
then I go with
them.
Then
you go with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
And I really enjoy festivals. Usually it's every weekend during the summer I'm at a festival. You know, it's like you fly in, fly out. And I work lots of different festivals. I like the small, rootsy festivals. I work for a Campbell Bay Music Fest on mm-hmm. Main Island.
Mm-hmm.
I also work for Artswells up in, close to Prince George in BC. I like those, you know, small, rootsy places too.
Yeah, exactly. Very good, very mm-hmm. good. So we're getting to the end of our interview. So I was looking, you know, your history a little bit and researching your career a little bit. I found out that you had been an instructor at a girls' rock.
Oh yeah, girls' rock camp.
Camp, yeah. And also that you were doing workshops for the Women in Music organization.
That's right.
So you are doing the work. You are just doing, you're minding your own business, doing your work the best way that you can, being excellent at your job. But you are also working a little bit to promote, you know, the equality in the industry. Is this important for you?
Extremely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I've been so lucky.
Yes.
I want other people to be, you know, that lucky as well and not have any issues because of their gender or if they're part of a minority or anything. And yeah, I started working with Girls Rock Camp, like at the very beginning, like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Support them. They're a great organization. The workshops I do for, I did some for Women in Music BC, for Producers Lounge, which is also a program in Vancouver for female non-binary people to get into production skills and whatnot. And so the type of workshops I do for that, it's mostly for performers to be more comfortable on stage, because that's something, you know, as a woman musician, if you deal with the sound guys,
I'm quoting in the air, sound guys,
they can be quite demeaning and not trust, they just think you don't know how to use your gear and everything. So I try to do these workshops so they can build more confidence when they're on stage, they're comfortable communicating with the sound tech about what they need. You know, it's like if your vocals don't sound right in the monitors, like how do you communicate that with your sound technician? Just learning how you gear all plugs in and also learning what we do as sound technicians so they understand that side of things as well. And I also, I'm an instructor at Nimbus.
That's right. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that.
No, that's all good. And there's not that many women there either in the live sound program, you know, like usually it's like one or two per term.
Wow.
I mean, we have very small classes, like 8 people. So
yeah.
But yeah, the women I've taught there, like I'm so proud of them, proud of all my students.
Yeah.
In November, I took one of my students on tour with me.
Oh, wow.
And her name is Jay. Jay Bagaspes. She's amazing. And I just wanted to be able, because it's kind of hard to get your foot in the door to go on tour. And yeah, I was able to take her with me. She was the stage tech. We were touring with an artist called Kim Churchill from Australia. And it was cross Canada tour, months long. And it was incredible for me because, you know, I trained her, so she's awesome.
You can bow for her skills.
Well, that's the thing, like, I didn't have to worry at all about what she was doing on stage.
That's very good.
yeah, it was a really great experience for sure. And then, yeah, I see them, you know, work around town. I go to a festival and they're working the stage or whatnot.
Oh.
And it's really, really cool.
Oh, that must be very satisfying and rewarding.
It's so rewarding. And there's one more thing, too. An organization called Sound Girls. It's a worldwide organization. It started in the States. And it's basically a website and groups of people in each town, you know, that can bring a bunch of people together to share resources, to network, and just like support each other in this industry.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I will link to all those organizations in the information of the episode information. So on where we can find you online?
Instagram, Swan2N. Because there's two N's in my name.
I'll be sure to link to it.
I'm on Facebook. Otherwise, that's about it.
Yeah. Any shows that you recommend that we go see that you're mixing, that you're engineering for coming up in Vancouver or on tour?
Well, I'm going on tour just next week across the prairies with a band called The Harpoonist and the Axe Murderer, which is a great band. I've been working with them for 4 years now.
Excellent.
And then month of March, I'll be mostly in Vancouver at the Fox. On top of my head, I can't think of shows that I'll be working. But there's always, once a month, we have this night called 4x4. It's put on by Adam Fink, who's a great drummer in town, plays with lots and lots of bands. And he puts on this night, it's like four local bands for $4 and $4 drinks. And it's on a Tuesday, usually. And I highly recommend everybody goes to see those shows because, like, for me, that's how I discovered the new bands in the city. Oh. And it's really cool.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Thank you so much.
You're so
Thank
welcome.
You
Thank
again
you.
For coming on a rainy Saturday at lunchtime.
That's all good.
To do an interview with me. I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
And that's our interview. Thank you very much again to Swan Bara for talking to me and for all her incredible insight. And thank you very much for listening. A new episode will be coming soon. In the meantime, keep listening to music and being a fan. Bye-bye. Girls Talk About Music is written and produced by me, Andreina Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rolim. The music theme is by The Good Sister. And the drum samples are by Sebastian Lavigna. You can find this podcast on Instagram @Girls Talk About Music.